Good morning. My name is Li Bingpan. I'm going to talk about mixing highly compressible turbulence. So this is based on my work with Evan. Okay. So it's based on my work with Evan Scandipiaco at Arizona State University. So the work was motivated by astrophysical applications. So we were interested in the mixing process in the interstellar gas. So heavy elements produced by stars are released to the interstellar medium by supernova explosions and stellar winds, and how the mixing efficiency of these elements determines the degree of chemical inhomogeneity in the interstellar gas. And this inhomogeneity could be measured by observations. So it's known that the interstellar medium is turbulent and highly compressible. The RMS Mach number can reach as high as several tens. So we carried out a systematic numerical study on mixing in supersonic turbulence. So these are questions we wanted to answer. So first, how do compressible modes affect the mixing process? So for example, how the mixing time scale depends on the RMS Mach number. So we also wanted to know what possible scalar structures look like in supersonic turbulence. And finally, theoretical models predicted an inverse scalar cascade in highly compressed turbulence. We wanted to confirm if inverse cascade exists in supersonic turbulence. So this is to illustrate the cascade picture for energy dispersion and turbulent mixing. So the cascade is basically a continuous breakup of large eddies to smaller eddies, and this process continues until the dissipative scale is reached, where the kinetic energy is removed. From the cascade picture, we can have a chromatograph scaling for velocity difference or the chromatograph spectrum. The energy decay time scale is determined by the larger eddy turnover time. So the same cascade picture is adopted by a classic phenomenology for mixing. So assuming the time scale at each step along the scalar cascade is given by the eddy turnover time, we have this relation between the scalar difference and the velocity difference. So in incompressible turbulence, delta V goes like length scale to 1/3, so delta C squared goes to goes like length scale to 2/3. So that also corresponds to minus 5/3 for a scalar spectrum. And the mixing time scale is also given by the large eddy time over time. So now what happens in supersonic turbulence? So numerical simulations of supersonic turbulence showed that the structure function or spectrum become steeper as Mach number increases, and this is because of shocks. And it's also found that in supersonic turbulence, the energy dissipation rate is given by the large eddy turnover time at all Mach numbers. So these are questions we wanted to ask about mixing in supersonic turbulence. First, we wanted to know if this classic phenomenology applies to supersonic turbulence. So if it applies, then we would have the scalar scaling becoming flatter as the velocity scaling becomes steeper as Mach number increases. So we will test this using numerical simulations. The second question is how the mixing time scale change as Mach number increases. So these are the equations we needed to solve. It's the usual hydro equations with external force to drive the flow this term is the whiskers term, and it's not explicitly included in our simulations. The energy dissipation is actually through numerical diffusion. We used an isothermal equation of state, that is the sound speed here is taken to be constant. So to study mixing, we evolved an equation for passive scalars. It's a direction diffusion equation. The passive scalar here is defined as its concentration, defined as the ratio of tracer density to the flow density. Again, this diffusion term was not included in our simulations. So this is how we did the simulation. We used the flash code, and the numerical resolution is 5 tera cubed. The boundary conditions are periodic. So the flow is driven by a solenoidal external force, and the wave number range used to generate the force is in a range from 2 pi to 6 pi. The force was said to be Gaussian, and it has a finite temporal correlation time scale, and we changed the amplitude of the force to get different RMS Mach numbers, and the RMS Mach numbers we studied were in the range from 0.9 to 6.1. For passive scalars, we used the exact same driving parting as for the flow. So that's because we wanted to have a direct comparison between energy dissipation and scalar dissipation. And this comparison gave us some useful information on how scalar fluctuations are dissipated. So these are images for the velocity in the x direction and the concentration on a slice of a simulation grid for Mach 0.9. And
what about the three independent scalars?
It's just different colors. It's just velocity. Red is a higher velocity. The blue is lower. It's a
lean. In the previous slide, you had three independent scalars for statistics. It means in the same velocity,
you just
use three different buckets for three different scalars.
The
last sentence.
Oh, okay. So actually, this is just for one scalar. The three scalars are independent. In the picture, we showed I show only one. Okay. So the impressive structures at Mach 0.9 are.
Oh,
the
source.
Huh?
Yeah, the source of the scalar.
Yes, it's just a large scale forcing, like the velocity, like how we force the flow. So the impressive structures here are vertices, and this leaves a signature on the concentration field. The small scale concentration structures are produced by stretching by vertices and shear in the velocity field. The geometry looks. It's just like it's also like a Gaussian large scale forcing. It's just like in a realistic.
Like
heat or something. Okay, I think in practical applications you have to consider like a source term, like which is like completely convoluted and uncompluted spaces. So it's like a ink in water. So it's like.
But the concentration, so in other words, since you constantly pumping into.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's just for a theoretical study. So it's not for a particular application. So we just want to know the general physics here.
So if I have a equivalent compressive control, and I have a gas that has a very high absorption, with a magnet, very strong magnet, and I'm generating everywhere that's a scalar, like heating it
locally.
Okay. for my test scaler, which is the case of temperature.
Okay. So.
Okay.
No, it has a mean zero. I let the source to have mean zero mean, so it does, the mean does not. Yes, it's like you subtract the mean from. We are trying to do that too, but this is just to understand the physics of mixing. Okay, so at Mach 6.1, the geometry is quite different. We see strong shocks, and the impression is that the velocity is dominated by compressible modes. But actually, a statistical measurement shows that most of energy is still contained in solenoidal modes. So for the concentration field, we see some edge-like structures with edges usually coincide with the without shocks. This the edge is produced by the squeezing of the by the shocks. So the shock basically just compresses the scalar field and amplify the gradient. So we get a large gradient, scalar gradient, right around the shocks. But these edge-like structures are not discontinuities because the amplification of the gradient is finite. It's about equal to the density jump across the shock. So there is a difference between the edge-like structures and the shocks. Shocks are discontinuities, and these edges are not. I think the amplitude of the fluctuations are not important here. I just wanted to show the structures.
Because I think that there would be vertical structures visible behind the shock as well, if you would adjust the color map to the same velocity
So do you mean if I could choose a color scale so that the solenoidal modes can be visible?
Yeah. Right.
Oh, okay. So I didn't know that.
But it's color match that is non-linear.
Oh, it's linear. The color
the color match is not linear, but the VI is completely non-linear.
Oh, I see. Yeah. But we have
gray scales
are also. Yeah, but we have both negative and positive values here. So the table here basically shows the solenoidal to compressible ratios as a function of Mach number. This column here and this column and the third column are the ratio of divergence variance to the vorticity variance with and without density weighting. The behavior is similar. It first increases and then saturates at Mach number larger than 3. And the fourth column here is the fraction of energy contained in this of compressible modes. It increases and then saturates again. So this fraction is not universal. It depends on how you force the flow. Since our flow is forced by a solenoidal force, solenoidal force, so it's quite the fraction is quite small, and the last column, in the last column, we only count the energy at the wave numbers larger than 8 pi. That's where the cascade starts. So it's this fraction actually is the ratio of solenoidal mode to compressible, the fraction of compressible mode to solenoidal modes in the inertial range. So we see it increases first, and then saturates at 1/3. This 1/3 means energy equipartition between solenoidal modes and compressible modes. So here we define the mixing time scale to characterize the mixing efficiency. So we first look at the concentration variance equation. So we use the density weighting so that the advection term conserves the global variance. So this term is the scalar dissipation. And we also consider kinetic energy so that we can compare the two. So there is the difference between the two equations is a pressure term. This corresponds to PdV work. So and we found this term is negative in isothermal supersonic turbulence, meaning that the PdV work provides additional wave to kinetic energy loss to heat. So here we, for the scalar case, we see that the energy scalar dissipation depends on the scalar gradient. So this can be amplified by the velocity field, and the velocity field could stretch the concentration field and produce small scale structures, and thus enhancing scalar dissipation. So that the mixing time scale is defined just as by dividing the variance by a dissipation rate. Since diffusion term was not explicitly included in our code, so we could not evaluate this directly, but it can be estimated from the balance of the dissipation and the force and the forcing rate when a steady state is reached. So instead we evaluated the mixing time scale by dividing the variance by the forcing rate. So similar time scale defined for the kinetic energy loss. So we defined two time scales because the pressure term contributes to kinetic energy loss. So the first time scale here is for the overall kinetic energy loss, including contribution from PdV work and the viscous dissipation. The second one is just for viscous dissipation only. So the difference of the two time scales represents the contribution, the significance of PdV work to kinetic energy loss. So here is the results for the mixing time scale and energy dissipation time scale at different Mach numbers. The time scales are normalized to the dynamical time, and this curve here corresponds to the energy loss rate by a viscous dissipation only, and the second, this curve, dashed curve here corresponds to the overall kinetic energy loss. So the difference here is because the PdV work gives a significant contribution to kinetic energy loss. So we see that as Mach number increases, the kinetic energy dissipation becomes faster and faster. And this is because of the shocks, which are very strong dissipative structures. So it helps the kinetic energy dissipation. And this solid curve here is for the mixing time scale. We see it first increases and then saturates. And this is similar to the behavior of the compressible energy fraction as a function of Mach number. So it means that when you have more energy in compressible mode, the mixing efficiency becomes smaller. So meaning that the compressible modes are less efficient at enhanced mixing than the solenoidal modes. So one explanation is that scalar structures are not discontinuous. So these edge-like structures, as I mentioned, the edge-like structures are kind of are actually continuous. Here we show the second order of velocity structure functions and scalar structure functions. So for the velocity structure functions at Mach 0.9, the scaling is a Kolmogorov. So as the Mach number increases, the structure function becomes steeper and steeper. And at Mach 6.1, the structure function is almost linear with the length scale. So on the other hand, the scalar structure functions the slope for the structure scalar structure function at Mach 0.9 the slope is also 2/3. This is consistent with the classical phenomenology for incompressible turbulence. And as the Mach number increases, the scalar structure function first flattens. This is consistent with the prediction of the classic phenomenology. However, at Mach number larger than 3, the scalar structure function starts to become steeper. And we think this is because of the strong expansions and the compressions that exist at Mach number larger than 3. So this compression and expansions were not considered in the classical phenomenology. So we think that since the scalar field basically follow the velocity field, so the expanding regions would produce large scale scalar structures, and at the compressed regions, scalar structures of smaller scales are produced. But in a supersonic turbulent flow, most of the regions are occupied by expanding regions, so there is a bias toward generating larger scale structures, making the structure function steeper. Now we consider the cascade direction cascade direction for scalars. So as I mentioned earlier, theoretical models showed that there could be an inverse cascade if the the vectoring flow is highly compressible and a critical compressibility was predicted, about which a scalar energy cascade to large scales. And we did not find any inverse cascade in our 3D simulations, and it's because the critical compressibility was not reached even at our highest Mach number. So we evaluated the compressibility from this formula, which is based on the definition of compressibility in the theoretical works. In this equation, you can see here is the scaling exponent of second order structure function. D is the dimension of the flow. C here is the ratio of the longitudinal structure function to the transverse one. So the three figures here show the longitudinal and transverse structure functions at 3 Mach numbers. So the so here this one below is for the longitudinal structure function, and the upper one is for the transverse structure function, and the ratio of longitudinal to transverse is about 3/4. This is consistent with the value for incompressible turbulence. And as the Mach number increases, the transverse structure function gets closer to the longitudinal structure function, so the ratio is getting close to 1. And we found that it does not get below 1, and it seems there is a saturation of the ratio at Mach number larger than 4.5. And the fact that the transverse and longitudinal structure functions are close to each other correspond to the equipartition between the solenoidal modes and the compressible modes at high Mach numbers. So we note that for this ratio C equal to 1, the compressibility is 1 over D, so it's 1/3 in 3D. And so since the ratio does not gets larger than 1, so the compressibility is always smaller than 1/3. So even at the highest Mach number, our simulated flow is in a weak compressible limit, and similar results are found in 2D flows, and the compressibility is always smaller than 1/2. So, and we didn't see any inverse cascade either. So things are different in 1D because 1D are fully compressible, and we did find a inverse cascade. So this picture, these figures are for the energy spectrum and the scalar spectrum at about Mach 0.4, 0.5. So the energy spectrum has a slope of minus 2 corresponding to shocks. Here for the scalar spectrum, the breaking point here is where we forced the scalar fluctuations. So for the most of the scalar fluctuations inversely scale to large scales, and the slope here is minus 1, and the inverse cascade is probably due to the expansions in between shocks. And this minus 1 slope is probably because of the smooth velocity field in between shocks. So we also found an inverse scalar cascade in Burgers turbulence. The conclusion here seems to be that scalars can inversely scale to large scales only at 1D, and at a higher dimensions, the critical compressibility is not reached, and we didn't see any inverse cascade. So we also tried to see if inverse cascade occurs at higher dimensions in a synthetic flow where you can control the compressibility. So the correct cascade direction is closely related to the particle pair dispersion behavior. So we could check if there is inverse cascade by looking at the particle pair dispersion. So the figure, the left panel here shows the trajectories of two particles released at the origin here, and we see that after a short period of time, the trajectories tend to separate, and the separation becomes larger and larger. And this is for incompressible flow. The right panel here is for a rotational velocity field, and the two particles are started here, and the trajectory collapse, and they always stick together. This means that in this velocity field, there exists an inverse cascade. So the conclusion is that at dimensions higher than 1, you can have an inverse cascade. If a synthetic field, velocity field have high enough compressibility, and this supports the theoretical predictions. So we also analyze the scalar structure functions at high orders. So these four panels here show this see the structure functions at order 2, 4, 9, 10. The left panels show the structure functions as a function of length scale, and because the numerical resolution was limited, we see only a very narrow power law range. However, if we use the extended self-similarity, that is to plot the structure functions against the third order one, we get a very extended power law range, and this allows us to measure the scale exponents quite accurately. So even at order 9 and 10, there is a quite broad power law range. So this figure, the figure here shows the compensated structure functions from order 1 to order 10. So it's just to show that there is enough range to measure the exponents accurately.
Scalar, yes, that's probably
the second order. Use the second order? You mean, okay. I guess that doesn't matter if which reference we use, right?
I think both one second order.
Yeah, the convention is second order, but I used the third order because I thought the frame the reference is not essential for our results. Okay, this is this shows the scaling exponents as a function of order for velocity structure functions, mixed structure functions, and scalar structure functions are two Mach numbers. So the mixed structure function is defined here. It's interesting because this quantity here is associated with scalar cascade. So the data points on the top are for Mach 0.9, and we found these exponents are consistent with those from incompressible flows. So the scalar structures are more intermittent than the velocity structures. And on the bottom, the data points are for Mach 0.6, 6.1, and this curve here is for the scalar structures. And so the scalar structures are less intermittent than the velocity structures at the Mach 0.61. And it is, again, because the scalar field does not have discontinuity structures, discontinuous structures, where the shocks are very intermittent, and it contributes to making the velocity field more intermittent. So as the Mach number increases, the velocity field becomes significantly more intermittent, while the degree of intermittency for the degree of intermittency for scalar structures is very slight. So the lines here are fit from the model by Xie and Levesque. We changed the parameters in the model to get the best fit, and it seems that the model works well for the three kind of structures at our Mach numbers. So here are the fit parameters we used in the model. So for the velocity structures, this parameter beta here is called the intermittency parameter, and we found for velocity structures it keeps decreasing, corresponding to the decrease of intermittency we saw on last slide. So that's this parameter D here is the dimension, fractal dimension of the most intense velocity structures. And it increases from 1, corresponding to vortex tubes, to 1.8, which corresponds to shocks, roughly. So for the scalar structures, we find the intermittent parameter changes only very slightly. This is also consistent with the figure I showed on last slide. So we found that the dimension of the strongest velocity structures, scalar structures, have a dimension of 2 at almost all Mach numbers. So this means that the most intense scalar structures are sheet-like at all Mach numbers. So this could be understood because both the compressible modes and the solenoid model modes tend to produce 2D structures. So for the compressible modes, I just showed that they produce edge-like structures, which is 2D. So that's why at all Mach number, the dimension is 2, close to 2. You mean these parameters?
I mean, they are all the structure functions.
Yes.
Do you use absolute value?
Yes, I use absolute value. So here are my conclusions. So we found that the mixing time scale increases with Mach number for Mach smaller than 3. And it suggests that the compressed modes are less efficient at enhanced mixing. And the solenoid modes are primary mixer at all Mach numbers. So the second order scalar structure functions has a slope of 2/3 in subsonic flow. And as Mach number increases, the structure function first flattens and then steepens at the Mach number larger than 3. So we found an inverse scalar cascade in 1D simulation, but not in 2D or 3D. And at these higher dimensions, the critical complexity compressibility was not reached. And finally, we find the scalar structure functions can be described by a Shiller-Lavaca model, and the most intense structure scalar structures are sheet-like at all Mach numbers. That's it. Thank you.
Question.
I mean, your point was
very interesting, because this one. Yeah, you can dream any type of flow, like when we did this prediction on the velocity scale.
Yes.
But it's interesting that the real velocity doesn't want to have the side of your compressibility, which would require velocity. Because the scale basically means that you don't have positive Lyapunov-Weitz power. So all the Lyapunov-Weitz powers are negative. There is no effective mixing in the system. And real fluid doesn't want to do it. And there will be some law of nature here, which I never thought about it. I find it very interesting.
Okay, thank you.
If somebody can prove that fluid would be, you know, would not never exist in such a state result for the world. Even though one can synthetically kind of create it.
Yeah. Okay.
You see signs of the scalar separation.
No. For the. You mean the saturation at high orders? I didn't see. It seems to be increasing, but at higher orders, we cannot measure the exponent accurately anymore. So below order 10, there is no saturation, it seems. The compressibility of the flow. You mean the weakly compressible regime? Yeah, it increases. Yeah, it's not, yeah, it increases a little bit from here to here.
I have an experimental question. So your Mach number is defined with respect to the fluctuating.
It's the RMS velocity divided by the sound speed.
So if you have 0.9, does that mean that you're lower the Reynolds number you do?
Reynolds number?
I mean, if you go, so parts of your flow are supersonic. That's my question. If you go to
0.9, yes.
You have some fluctuations.
Yes.
Around the RMS.
Yes.
If you mean this rare event.
Right.
So these rare events are actually compressible or not?
The rare event,
and
you mean the high, you mean...
I have a feeling of how high the flow is, right?
You mean,
the range is explored Mach number by your flow.
You mean the range of the velocity PDF?
Yeah.
Is
part of it outside, is it above?
The PDF of the velocity is one because the RM. Okay, so it's the Mach number I mentioned here is defined as the RMS velocity.
Right, so that's one RMS, but if you go out, you know, it's Gaussian.
Yeah, it's Gaussian. So
most of the flow is actually being compressed. You're very close to being compressed. Part of your flow is never really outside of the.
Yes, for Mach.
Very small regions which are above Mach 1.
Yes, I think so.
That would make a plot of Mach number in your flow, a picture of Mach number.
Yes.
Right, so
yeah, but at Mach 6, but at yeah, but at Mach 0.61, then the distribution is very broad. That's like RMS is 6.1.
I don't think changing Mach number will change velocity PDF substantially.
Yeah, it's Gaussian.
Right. So the one I question is an experimental, so that means if you have a flow which is highly, actually relatively high compressible because you're close to 1.1. You tell us there's no change in exponents, right? Everything is just the same way it was for the case where it was incompressible.
Yes.
You should worry about compressibility at all, you should care about it because it's completely seems to be relevant.
At low Mach numbers,
low Mach numbers, the experiment is 1.1 is pretty high.
Yeah.
So
unless you ask the physicist.
No, but that's what I took away. You know, I'm much less nervous about the Mach number for something.
But you are right to worry about high moments. If you aren't worried about velocity, what velocity gradients, then compressible part will give you just complete changes.
Complete change.
Yes.
Okay. You're right. Okay. Right, that's exactly the real moment of
work. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, you start later, you get more time, right? So we